On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap rivalry weekend. We preview the Padres and Dodgers playing for the first time this year. We take our tarps off metaphorically and chat about what's going on in St. Louis. Yankees, Mets, White Sox, Cubs, Marlins, Rays. Buckle up. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks they need a sequel to Angels in the Outfield. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We could call it Angels in the Dumpster. Now, look, I do know there was a sequel called Angels in the Infield that was a little darker than Angels in the Outfield. But we need a trequel, a thirdquel, in which the Angels and the higher power above never shows up for the baseball team and they just keep on losing? Or is that just the timeline we're living through?
That's just what we're watching. And unfortunately, that is going to be, it is the Netflix series that is happening right now. Probably for the best, they are not filming all that is going on in Angels world. But the point is they are so bad and they are on the losing end of our first topic of this weekend recap edition of Baseball Barbacast. And that is the Dodgers sweeping as well as their rival, the Padres. Let's get to it. It's our opener.
The Los Angeles Dodgers came into this rivalry weekend scuffling a little bit, not playing their best. And what was the perfect solve for their ills? A trip down the state to Orange County to take on the lowly, embarrassing joke of a franchise that is the Angels of Anaheim. This was not close at any point. The Dodgers outscored the Angels 31-3 in this series, shutting them out in game one with a bullpen game. Homers from Andy Pyles and Max Muncy in that one. Game two, Ohtani, 5 RBI, a homer from Mookie against Alek Manoah, who is throwing 86-mile-an-hour fastballs. Dodgers win 50-2. And then in game three, not that much closer, Roky Sasaki best the outing of the year for the Dodgers. They win 10-1 as they blast Grayson Rodriguez in his first start of the season. The Dodgers win, the Angels lose, and none of us are surprised. I guess the one important piece of context here is the Angels, for all of their inadequacies, did beat the Dodgers all six times they played last season, somehow. And that not the case this year. And I think it is a reminder that the Angels are definitively worse than they have been. And it tells me more about them than it does about the Dodgers, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think the Angels, this is not necessarily something new, but when you have organizational rot and a losing culture, a lack of depth, a lack of expectations, and a lack of cohesion in terms of a plan, a vision, a proof of concept that they can win baseball games, these results are going to pile up. And especially against the Dodgers team that is still trying to find it. But I think some of these losses were also perfect encapsulations of the vast discrepancy between these organizations, especially that first game of the weekend where a Dodgers bullpen game with pitchers who weren't even in the organization like 5 minutes ago, they can patch it together and throw a shutout because they just kind of know what they're doing. They know what they're looking at. The pitchers that they are bringing in, they have a plan to help them succeed. Even if it's just for a small sample of a few games, even if it's just patchwork until the really expensive actual top-tier players get back from the injured list. Meanwhile, the Angels, you have the opposite, which is, oh, let's just sign the people that people have heard of, and surely they will suddenly be good with us, right? Whether that is Alek Manoah, whether that is trading for Grayson Rodriguez. And the Rodriguez situation is a little bit different. I know that trade we talked about at the time, trading, you know, 1 year of Taylor Ward for multiple years of Grayson Rodriguez. Maybe they're thinking bigger picture. Oh, if Grayson Rodriguez can be healthy, he can help us. And I don't want to doom Grayson's season to begin with, or right here. At the same time, it's this pattern, right? And this is what we talk about when we are picking standings, when we are picking. It's not always just about who is currently on the roster. It's a lot about that. But the Angels have had rosters recently, and even this year, you look around and you say, oh, wait a minute, I like that. Oh, Trout's back. Oh, I like Zach Neto. Jose Soriano, look at this. But when you are this bad at just so much else below the minor leagues, below the major league level, and just how all of it functions on the major leagues field, and you've put up this much losing over the last decade, why would any of us believe that this is going to work? And so this was just on display, and to do it at home is all the more embarrassing. And the Dodgers are kind of throwing out a quite the mix. And then suddenly, to top it all off, you get Roki Sasaki's best start of the year.
There is a quote in the movie Miracle where Herb Brooks says, you don't have enough talent to win on talent alone. That is true about the Angels. Frankly, it is true about most baseball teams, right? It's not just about how good your players are. It's about how you deploy them. It's about your planning, your strategy. It's about the players that aren't on your team yet, as you mentioned, and the organization's track record of filling those holes. The 26 dudes that you start with are never the 26 dudes that you finish with. And the Dodgers, with names like Wyatt Mills and Charlie Barnes, threw a two-hitter on Friday against the Angels. This series was in Anaheim. Dodgers fans took it over in impressive fashion. Unsurprisingly, there were rats in the stands. There was a report earlier this year that rats were taking over one of the concessions that got shut down at Angel Stadium. This series, we got a legitimate possum. Did you see this? Like a real honest to God possum. So there's a video of it on TikTok where a Dodgers fan basically like holds up a living possum in the air like a trophy almost, and he captured the possum, and security's waiting with a cardboard box, and he puts it in the cardboard box and they take it away, and the Dodgers fan, you see him go, get the F off me, like celebrating his, you know, his trophy of the possum. But it's just literal organizational rot. Like no other team is this stuff happening to now that the A's, I guess, are out of the Coliseum.
But here's what's so upsetting about that anecdote, and that now the actual stadium itself, the fan experience. What did we hear from Artie Moreno in one of his rare comments to the media earlier this season? Blatantly admitting what we are really focusing on is giving the fans a positive experience at the stadium, whether the team is winning or not. Remember, he had that quote where it was like, actually, what fans care about most is affordability and a positive experience and like affordable concessions and a good,
sure,
you know, getting to and from the stadium. And by the way, there are some problems with that mindset from the perspective of a major league owner. But if we just step back and don't worry about the playoff drought, that is a decent aspiration that some organizations do better than others. And I think in some cases, my understanding is that the Angels have done that well at times over the past 20 years, certainly relative to Dodger Stadium in some respects. However, if you now you have this happening, it's like, well, what is good? What is good that is happening here?
Let me play Angels advocate
please,
for a second.
Someone has to.
Zoo and ball game for the price of what?
Oh.
Wildlife at the game. People are, it's always whimsical when we see like a squirrel on the field, possum in the stands. Frankly, what's the difference? I think that I learned more about the Angels than the Dodgers in this series. The Dodgers are good, like duh. The Angels are not just bad, they are worse than they have been. They have never reached 100 losses. They have never been the worst team in the sport. Both of those things are kind of hard to wrap our brains around considering how awful they've been for so long. This could be the bottom. I genuinely believe this could be the bottom. I think we could see their GM, Perry Minasian, get fired. And it's a damn shame that this is the year that Mike Trout has kind of turned the clock back. Oh, gosh, it bums me out. We should talk about Roki Sasaki, though, before we move to the Padres. Best outing of the year from him. 4 hits over 7 innings, 8 Ks, 1 run. He's thrown 2 different types of fork splitter. He's like a forkball and a splitter. Now, again, helps that it was the Angels. They're going to chase more. They're worse hitters. But a nice step in the correct direction for the Dodgers' most mercurial character.
I mean, forget the season. This is the best start of his career, and I don't even think it's particularly close. Yeah. He has never completed seven innings before. He has had a few recently where it's been trending in the right direction. He hasn't had as many total blowups, but no walks. I mean, that alone is pretty impressive. I know that having this additional pitch where you're kind of splitting the split in the fork and the slider's still coming along, a little bit different, some different pitches to keep hitters off balance in terms of guessing what is going to come, because he was just becoming so predictable as a 1.5, 2.5 pitch pitcher. Ultimately, whatever the pitch mix is, the command has been so bad. And the fastball in particular, when the velocity isn't at the top, is just not quite good enough from a shape standpoint. He credited Dalton Rushing with the pitch calling, which was cool to see. I know they've basically been linking up all season. You have to imagine at some point there's going to be some chemistry there that moves in the right direction. So I'm going to wait until I see it against a little bit more of a disciplined lineup that wasn't already in probably such a terrible mental space after the first two games that it's hard to really judge it. But this is why you leave Roki in the rotation over and over and over.
Right.
We know they also now have some injuries. Blake Snell now going on the IL. We didn't have that mentioned on here. The latest of the loose body parade continues with Blake Snell. Tyler Glass now on the IL with a minor back issue. So they're going to keep him in there because the talent is still, there's still something there. What we were watching with Roki did not seem tenable if nothing was going to change. But players are allowed to change. Players are allowed to get better. And if Roki is healthy and he's able to put together a start like this, this is something to build on, something, a sample of success that he can now go back and be like, okay, this was working. How can I apply this against better hitters, against different lineups? Because before, he didn't have really any sort of large sample of success as a starter in the major leagues. So I think that's a really encouraging thing. And then, of course, Ohtani finally has another big weekend offensively after he'd been scuffling. The OPS had dropped below 800. Now he has, I think, 5 or 6 hits, gets a homer. His OPS is back over 830. But same kind of thing. It's like, okay, let's see you do it against some better pitchers, but still encouraging for the Dodgers as well.
Dodgers of the Padres, and then the Brewers coming up. Roki's next two starts will be Brewers on the road, and then Phillies at home on May 31st. Let's pivot to the Padres, who took all three games in the wonky, convoluted Eddie Vedder Cup over the Seattle Mariners this weekend. Can I just say, I know that the Eddie Vedder Cup is like a bit, I get it. He's not a Padres or a Mariners fan. He's a Cubs fan. And so it really does not hit for me. A grump?
No, I agree. People, it's just all about his musical roots, is my understanding, but it is a little bit strange that this is what they lean into. Either way, the takeaway from this year's Vedder Cup is that the Mariners had no chance. They were swept in San Diego last month by the Padres, and now they welcome the Padres to town and get swept again. So Padres going 6-0 against the Mariners this season. This weekend was a lot of just kind of a classic Mariners can't hit at home, and the Padres can really pitch it. We get Randy Vasquez going 6 scoreless on Friday, Mason Miller with a 4-out save with 4 strikeouts. That's what Mason Miller does. Logan Gilbert, kind of a clunker on Saturday. He allows 3 homers. Walker Buehler was pretty solid. And then Lucas Giolito, our employed pal, makes his Padre debut on Sunday and is pretty good. He only allows a 1 hit over the first 5 innings. Then his command totally abandons him, and a couple of runs end up on his ledger. But Gavin Sheets, a couple of homers, or I guess 3 homers on the weekend. Padres win that one on Sunday Night Baseball, 8-3. Very impressive showing for San Diego. Seattle just keeps trying to climb back to 500 and then keeps slipping. They are certainly dealing with a lot of injuries right now, with Cal Raleigh finally on the IL for the first time. Brendan Donovan back on the IL. They're going to call up Colt Emerson, or they just did call up Colt Emerson. We'll talk about that in a second. But let's focus on the Padres. This series, Padres-Dodgers, is an actual rivalry we look forward to every season. It is funny. I do like that after this rivalry weekend where we watch all these interleague matchups, this week that we're about to have is actual, like, true serious division play. We've got five opportunities on the schedule. Padres and Dodgers is just three games, but there's five other divisional series that are four games starting on Monday, which is pretty exciting. But Dodgers-Padres is certainly the one we're looking forward to the most. And I got to say, like, this is a big opportunity for San Diego because despite their gaudy record, there's still part of them that I'm just like, okay, what? Are they actually that good? Because you look at the stats and there's not that much that pops in a way that some of these other teams, whether it's the Braves or the Cubs or the Yankees, and you look and you're like, wow, you got some players having huge seasons. There's really not that many guys that are doing that right now. And it's not just about Tatis not having a home run, which he still doesn't.
Yeah, like they have basically the same run differential as the Mariners. They have a worse run differential than the Pirates. If you look at everyone's statistics, you'd be like, that's a 500 baseball team, particularly on the offensive side. This offense has not been good. Yes, the team is 27 and 18. Yes, they're one game back of the Dodgers in the division. Yes, they are 30th in batting average, 28th in on base, 26th in slug, 28th in OPS. Okay, that's not like a little fluke, some cold weeks. Yeah. Like, this is one of the worst offenses in the sport. The San Diego Padres have one of the worst offenses in the sport. They have a lot of famous guys, and they've all been bad. Machado, Merrill, Tatis, Cronenworth, Nick Castellanos have all been just bad at hitting. Gavin Sheets, Luis Camposano, and Ty France are carrying this offense. Miguel Andujar, Xander Bogaerts, and Ramon Laureano have all been fine, like totally capable. Nice to see Bogaerts kind of level out. If he's this, that's totally okay. But really, it is Machado, Merrill, Tatis, Cronenworth. Like that quartet being Bupkis, I don't see how the Padres can exist this way for much longer and survive. Because like even in the rotation has been impressive, it hasn't necessarily been dominant.
No, not at all. And you know, their best starter from last year, arguably, I mean, I know Michael King was hurt, but Pivetta, four starts, and he's been injured. You know, this is not necessarily King and Vasquez. We know Randy Vasquez is certainly one of the bigger starting pitching breakouts we've had this season, but he's not goated necessarily in the Cy Young conversation. He's just been like pretty good. He's like been a good pitcher.
Will be.
We'll try and manifest that. But no, it's been about Sheets. You mentioned France and Camposano. I mean, sure, but those guys have gotten, you know, 60, 80 plate appearances. It's not like those guys are in the lineup every day. Camposano on the injured list now, too. So I think the big question about the Padres is, are these hitters actually not very good? Or is this actually great news? And yeah, at least some of these guys are about to heat up and turn the Padres into an actual good team with the cushion of a very good record that they have managed to build so far this season. I think I still lean closer to that, but it's kind of hard to say. And this series against the Dodgers will be this is the kind of one where you probably will need more than Gavin Sheets to beat the Dodgers. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but this is this will be a pretty legit test, and I'm glad they get to do this first series at home too. I think that's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm just for the record worried about Machado. I don't think he's elite anymore. Everything that Dave Dombrowski said about Bryce Harper, he should have just said about Manny Machado. Jake Cronenworth, worried. Nick Castellanos, don't even need to say that I'm worried. Like obviously, I'm worried. Not even worried, like certain. Tatis, I think, will be better than he's been the rest of the year. He can't not be. Merrill is the one that I'm the most optimistic about just because he's 23 and he's so talented and he's been an elite player. Like it's not like his physical skills have declined. You know what I mean? Where I think that is the concern with Machado and Cronenworth and even with Tatis a little bit. Where it's like, is this the same offensive inbox athlete that we saw back when he was, you know, drinking the super duper Capri Suns, if you know what I mean. But the bullpen has been the story of this club.
Yeah.
Mason Miller, so impressive, so dominant. But it's not just him, right? It's the arms that are behind Mason Miller, whether that's you know, Adrian Morahone or Estrada or Jason Adam, like they have had these, they've had depth in this pen for a long time and they still do. Heading into this series, our matchups will have Yamamoto against Michael King. King has been the best pitcher for the Padres so far this season. Emmett Sheehan against Griffin Canning on Tuesday. And then Shohei Ohtani, the game's second best player against its best player, Randy Vasquez, in the third game of the series on Wednesday night.
Yeah, that is that a night? Yes, it is. Okay, I'm glad these are three night games. I'm glad
I think
that
they'll sit. Don't be surprised if the Dodgers sit Ohtani against Vasquez just so that he doesn't get embarrassed.
But I will say that's the other subplot of Ohtani maybe starting to heat back up at the plate is, do they now get tempted to be like, no, you're going to hit. Of course, you're one of the best hitters in the world. Let's make sure you're in the lineup. We will see how that shakes out. But these are always some of the best games every season. Last year, we should point out the Dodgers, I'm pretty sure, won the season series pretty handily. Yes, the Dodgers last year went 9-4 against the Padres. So, and the Padres still, you know, won 90 games and made the postseason. But this is especially with some new characters, at least a few mixed in. I know Gavin Sheets was around last season, but Craig Stammen certainly will probably be someone we should talk about more as this Padres season unfolds. He's an interesting character.
Let me finish with Craig Stammen. Craig Stammen is a good addition to the Padres and a good addition to our baseball lives. Craig Stammen is bad for the Padres-Dodgers rivalry because Craig Stammen is one of the nicest people on the planet. Like Mike Schilt was a crapster. He was I'm not saying this in like a negative way. Like Mike Schilt wanted the smoke. He wanted to piss people off. He wanted to get in the Dodgers' brains. He wanted to make things a thing. He wanted to make mountains molehills, or molehills mountains, rather.
Yes.
Craig Stammen's the opposite. So, like, if there's a situation where, like, someone is throwing, like, up and in on someone, and Mike Schilt would have, you know, yelled across the dugout and called Dave Roberts a name, Craig Stammen's going to walk out onto the field and be like, Dave, I'm so sorry. From the bottom of my heart, we did not intend to do that. I like Craig Stammen, but if you want,
you're totally correct. That's why it is going to depend on Manny Machado, Ramon Laureano. He could piss off some Dodgers for sure.
That's true. That's true.
There are some people on the roster. Maybe even Castellanos. Gavin Sheets seems like a nice guy. You know, we'll see. So, I don't know if Lucas is going to start.
You're very,
you know,
right.
Throwing
Laureano
heads.
And Castellanos, the burden is on their shoulders to get the Dodgers fired up. And of course, that time that Manny Machado viciously attacked Dave Roberts with the baseball.
Exactly. I mean, so maybe we'll have a redux of that. Last point before we'll take a break. I do want to mention Cole Emerson getting the call up by the Mariners. This is one of the top prospects in baseball. Yeah. He signed a nearly $100 million extension before he even made his debut, I guess, last month, 2 months ago. And this is an interesting call up because this is not necessarily he has been the best player in AAA and he has to be up there. This is Brendan Donovan is hurt again. The bottom of this lineup has been awful. And if you just organize all of our players in the organization in the infield, he is now our best option. And I think it speaks to that. And we could say whether that's a good or a bad thing because he's a 20-year-old kid and they're going to ask him to come up and kind of help the offense and defense for that matter. But in some ways, it's a luxury. In some ways, it can be perceived as kind of a panic move. I think it's somewhere in between. It's a little bit disappointing, though, because normally when you have these big call-ups, well, what do? You kind of do it a couple days ahead. Okay, Cole Emerson's coming up. Okay, great. There's time for his parents to get to the game, and he's going to be in the lineup. I think how this went down speaks to the level of urgency and the circumstance, which was that Brendan Donovan had this lingering injury that he decided yesterday was going to go on the injured list, and Cole Emerson was down the road in Tacoma, and they decided to call him up, put him in the lineup. He wasn't even originally in the lineup. So I don't even think his parents made it to the game last night, which is disappointing. They're about to face a few lefties this week against the White Sox. So that would also maybe not necessarily be when you would bring up your top left-handed hitting 20-year-old prospect. What that tells me is that he's going to play third base. This kid is going to just be the third baseman while Brendan Donovan is out. They can put Leo Rivas back on the bench, and they're going to hope that he can figure it out. I think from a makeup standpoint, he's certainly going to be able to handle it. But because he wasn't necessarily tearing it up in AAA, this is going to be a big test for him to be kind of thrown in there as the everyday third baseman. But it is still exciting. The Mariners certainly need some sort of spark. They haven't been able to find any amount of consistency. And it's one of those things where it's just another thing that I'm excited to tune in and watch, whether it's going bad or not. But because of his circumstance, I think we have to be patient with his production because he is the second youngest hitter in the league besides Connor Griffin. And he probably could have used another month or two at AAA. So we'll see how he does. He is one of the top prospects in baseball, and I'm sure we will talk about him again soon. All right, let's take a break. When we return, one more sweep, and then we'll go around the league.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Those were two sweeps. Here's another one. The Phillies over the Pirates. Wow. The Philadelphia Phillies are back. They're alive. They've done it. On the mat, now off of it, they are over 500, which is just remarkable. They have gone 15-4 under Don Mattingly since Rob Thompson lost his job. They are 16-5 since Zach Wheeler got off the injured list. And this weekend, they took all three games over the Pittsburgh Pirates in what was once the Poop Bowl.
They were in last place on April 25th. They were behind the Mets, okay, who were playing just as bad. And the Mets, we're going to get to them in a second. They had a fun weekend, but they are still six games under, even as they've played slightly better. But the Phillies are now back up to second place, still eight games behind the Braves. But don't worry about that right now, because they're playing some good ball. And this weekend was just the whole package. I will say that it did not start out in a way where it was like the Phillies are back, but then, after falling down 6-0 because Aaron Nola, that's maybe not something we're super excited about with the Phillies, but after Aaron Nola pitches poorly and they go down 6-0, it was all Phillies for the rest of the weekend. They come all the way back. Schwarber hits two homers on Friday. He's up to 20. They win 11-9 in 10 innings. On Saturday, Bryce hits a 457-foot home run. Christopher Sanchez throws a shutout with 13 strikeouts and no walks. Oh, baby. And then on Sunday, Zach Wheeler, who you mentioned, nice to have him back. How about that? The Zach Wheeler-Paul Skeens showdown was living up to the hype for the first few innings. Skeens kind of falls apart there in the middle innings. Wheeler does his thing, and now the Phillies sweep the Pirates. The Pirates, not an awesome look, especially after that Friday loss. And the Phillies looked like the team that had the players that were used to winning a lot of baseball games, and the Pirates were not that. So that is what this weekend looked like to me.
Yeah. When the Phillies and the Mets were both in the sticks, both going through it, I made the point that it was going to be easier for the Phillies to get out of it quicker because they could look around the room and see all the people that have done this multiple years in a row together and say, well, of course we could do this. We're us. Whereas the Mets, you're looking around the room and you're like, Who's that guy? And the other biggest difference is that the Phillies have stayed healthy through this and the Mets have not. The Phillies have gotten healthier. The Mets have gotten less healthy. And so it is not exactly shocking that they have gotten back to normalcy first. Quick thought on the second game of the series, which made me laugh very hard. So Don Mattingly took that day off to attend his son's graduation, not the one who's the GM of the team, not Preston Mattingly's graduation, a different son. And so he was out. And so Dusty Wathen stepped in as interim manager. Dusty Wathen, who has been with the Phillies for a long time, managed at AAA, has been on the big league staff since 2018. Awesome guy. He's the interim manager. He's the bench coach now under Mattingly. It's like, oh man, Dusty Wathan, he's in charge. Like, what's he going to do? The answer, nothing. Because he didn't have to make a single decision. Christopher Sanchez goes complete game shutout. He doesn't make any pinch hit moves. No defensive replacements.
It's like he wasn't even there.
This game. It's like he wasn't even there.
He simulated. He was like, he just sat back and watched it. It's just like he was
Yeah, it's good that Dusty Wathan stepped in for the Christopher Sanchez start and not the Aaron Nola start. He would have had to do a little bit more managing, probably, with all the bullpen moves in that
seriously,
one.
I mean, that Friday game, I'm glad you mentioned that, because how many pitchers had to pitch in that? Seven pitchers? How many had to come in after Nola was a mess? Like, you really, it's a good thing Mattingly was there for that one, because they had to go to Mesa, Bolin, Shugart, Alvarado, Kirkering to kind of navigate their way to the end there.
Yeah.
With a couple pinch hits involved. But no, Dusty Wathan can just sit back and say, whoo, those are some good baseball players. This is fun.
This is easy.
Wait, was that?
Manage this?
He's managed in his place before, right? Was that his first ever game?
No, he never
managing?
Would have. No, first ever game, because he was never the bench coach.
So, now, again, I feel bad saying this. Maybe Dusty Wathan wants to be a major league manager and he has that opportunity in the future. But he does. Okay, so maybe he will get to that. But if not, what a resume. This is flawless.
Just
a flawless, I did nothing, and we won. Masterclass.
Bro suddenly really became important at work. Like, bro hasn't moved
but he
for
didn't
45
have to do
minutes.
Anything. Last thing I'll say about the Phillies. As I mentioned, they're back up to second place, but also the same record as the Pirates. So if you're looking in the wild card standings, this has evened up the Pennsylvania teams. The Pirates now sit tied for last place in the NL Central with the Cincinnati Reds at 24-23. But Pirates still have that plus. Phillies play the Reds this week. So Pirates, still have that plus 18 run differential. There is still some good things happening. We do believe the Pirates are a worthwhile team to consider. But this, especially at home, and especially with how that Friday game went, was a pretty discouraging step. They have this is a good transition. They are about to play the St. Louis Cardinals, whose vibes are, in outer space. So it's very different. So we'll get to that in a second. But in general, I think the Phillies are, I put them at 10 in my power rankings last week, even though they were still a few games under 500. Part of that is because there are so few teams beyond the top five that have legitimately been impressive consistently. So I still looked at the talent on the Phillies roster and how they started to be trending. I was like, this is still one of the better teams in baseball. And I have a feeling when I do power rankings next week, they will probably be even higher than 10.
It's been impressive, and the way that they've gotten back to this point is the way you would expect. Schwarber and Harper have been incredible. Starting pitching has gotten deeper into games, which means the not as good relievers pitch less often in important spots in close games. And then the bottom of the lineup has gotten better. Now, Alec Boehm and Bryson Stott aren't competing for MVP awards, but their OPSs are starting with sevens and eights instead of threes and fours. That matters.
Yeah.
Adolis Garcia, he is the one guy that has not really gotten it together. Justin Crawford has been really impressive, just like showed up and been a good presence at the bottom of the lineup. JT Realmuto has scuffled a little bit as well. But for the most part, like the Phillies, like this is how they were going to win games. It's not as if they're getting, it's not like the Padres, right? Where the Padres are getting all these contributions from people that we didn't expect. The Phillies just had their big boys wake up. And to be fair to Schwarber and Harper, they were playing well even when the team wasn't. Right, they've just been so good. Like, both of their OPSs are over 1,000 since they made the managerial change.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate the point you made earlier. They are probably the healthiest team in the league right now. They are really not missing anybody at this point. Now that Duran is back, they don't have any. The only guys on their injury list right now are Kyle Backus, Max Lazar, and Zach Pop. So with respect to those guys, I know Backes was maybe going to be a lefty that was of some utility.
Yeah.
They have everybody. Now they still have some issues on the roster, as you mentioned, but they have their guys. And right now, you look around the sport, there's just so many teams where it's like, wow, they're missing that guy. That is a huge guy missing. The Phillies don't. And so I think that goes a long way.
And that has been the case for this team for a while. Whether it is multiple years of good fortune or a legitimate injury prevention plan or acquiring players that don't get hurt a lot, the Phillies' big dudes have been remarkably healthy over this era of Phillies baseball. And I am not shocked that has continued to be the case. Okay, a couple more series here before we take a break and do turbo mode. Let's go around the league. Take off your shirt, put it in your hand, and wave it around your head. Something special happened this weekend at Busch Stadium. As Jordan described it to me before we started recording, this is the most Jake Mintz-coded story he can remember in quite some time, and I will take that as a compliment. Here's what happened quickly in the baseball games before we tell you about taking off your shirt, not having a tarp on. Cardinals take 2-3 over the Royals at home. Walk-off single in 11 innings on Friday. Nice win behind Kyle Leahy, 6-strong on Saturday. Royals win 2-0 on Sunday. That is less important, what happened on the field, than what happened in the stands. And it all begins in Alton, Illinois, where Stephen F. Austin University, their club baseball team, was in town for the D2 Club Ball World Series. What is club baseball? Well, many universities offer club baseball for people that don't want to do the whole varsity rigmarole, but don't want to play intramural softball. The people that play this really care about it. One of my best friends was the captain and in charge person for the Wash U club baseball team. So the Stephen F. Austin team traveled from Texas for the D2 Club Baseball World Series, and they lost their opening game to Grand Valley State University on Friday afternoon. Tough loss for the Jacks. And so they get in the car and they drive like the half hour from Alton, Illinois to St. Louis to take in the Cardinals game. And that Cardinals game didn't start great. Cards a little out of it. So the Stephen F. Austin club baseball team finds an empty section and starts taking off their shirts and waving them around over their heads. As the Cardinals come back and chip away and start playing better baseball, more and more people join the Stephen F. Austin baseball team out in right field. And by the end of the game, when the Cardinals hit a walk-off, four full sections of shirtless dudes waving their tarps over their heads like helicopters. And the camera angle from the broadcast is unbelievable, the Friday night one, where it's like single through the hole, winning run scores, pan to the runner running up the line, camera pan to right field of just the people going bananas. And for a Cardinals team, for a Cardinals organization that has been so culturally stale and staid and tight ass, like, this felt like legitimate grassroots energy, and they capitalized on it on Saturday when skipper Ollie Marmol invited the team to the game, invited the team into the clubhouse, and then himself purchased 1,000 tickets for the tarps off section and gave them away for free to fans. So Ollie Marmol, who I believe is the second or third longest, he's the third longest tenured manager in the NL, which is kind of wild to think about.
Yep.
He has been on the hot seat before as this team has kind of been wallowing in mediocrity. He has received a vote of confidence from his new president of baseball operations, Chaim Bloom. He did not receive that vote of confidence because Chaim Bloom thought he was going to invite a bunch of shirtless club baseball players from Texas into the clubhouse. But this is an example of capitalizing on that energy. And the videos from the clubhouse of the club baseball team and the Cardinals, like the St. Louis Cardinals, shirtless, like just hanging out together. Singular, unique experience. This is so good. I love this so much.
Here's the part that I really want to make sure we emphasize for those that were not following the story, didn't see it. Sometimes you have, I've seen in the past, okay, a manager or a player sees a certain fan or a group and their story resonates and they'll invite them into the clubhouse before the game. Oh, come to pregame, come to BP, come on the field. And it's kind of, oh, meet the players. And it's, you know, you're walking around and the guys are kind of getting ready. And it's like, oh, cool. Oh, nice to meet you. Oh, my God, I'm in the clubhouse. To bring them in postgame, which is, I don't know if I've really ever seen something like this. You know, maybe you'll have this if someone hits their first career home run and they're like trading the bat and the ball for with the fan that catches sure. it. You'll see something post game like this. But to have a whole group go into a major league clubhouse post game when guys are just getting out of the shower appropriately without their shirt on.
There is a clip.
And just to take a
there is a yes, clip of yes. Victor Scott in a towel.
Yes.
Just like waving the a different article of clothing around his head around these strangers who he doesn't know.
Right. And it's so good. It's also such a great reminder, and we know this because we've been obviously they would not have done this if the Cardinals didn't win, right? But because anytime the clubhouse, any Major League Baseball game, post game, if you win, whether your team is on track to lose 130 games or win 130 games, vibes are good. We're feeling good. Oh, great. These random club baseball team wants to come in here and take off their shirts. Cool. Oh, yeah. Sure. Woo. Let's do it.
Well, to be clear, they didn't ask to come in. They got invited. So there's like a video of Ollie outside the clubhouse summoned. Being like, you guys want to see the clubhouse? And they're like, yeah, sure. And good for the Cardinals players for embracing this. Like, this totally. Is just, oh, gosh, this organization needed this. Oh, it's just, it's so refreshing. And like, again, perfect example of toxic male masculinity. Take your shirt. Like, if that's how dudes want to be dudes and just whip your shirt around your head at a ball game, like, hell yeah, dude. Like, this is you know what this is? This is the most dudes rock baseball story we have had so far this year. It tells me, and like, the winner of this whole thing, actually, can I just finish the story here? My favorite part is that on Saturday, the Stephen F. Austin team had a game on Saturday morning. So they played at 11:30 to stave off elimination. Okay. They show up to the game late as a result. They win on a walk-off. And so they show up in the third inning and the place goes nuts. Like, everyone realizes that they're there. On the last night, on Sunday night, they had another elimination game against Grand Valley State again. And a bunch of Cardinals fans, like 30 Cardinals fans, went to the game to cheer them on. And they ended up losing, unfortunately. But it just fires me up so much. So what I wanted to do, Jordan, I wanted to give Ollie Marmol, like, just to emphasize how cool what he did was, I want to fly through the list of big league managers, and we're going to play yes, no, maybe. Would the manager invite the Stephen F. Austin team into the clubhouse after a win? Yes, no, maybe. You ready?
Okay.
Torrey Lovello, Diamondbacks.
I think maybe. Torrey's one for the boys.
Atlanta Braves, Walt Weiss.
No.
Absolutely not. No chance. Cubs, Craig Counsell.
No. No way.
No. Terry Francona, Cincinnati Reds. I think current Terry Francona, maybe older Terry Francona in the past. No.
Agreed.
I think he's chicken and beer. He's been fighting against that for a long time. Clayton McCullough, Miami Marlins. No. Milwaukee Brewers, Pat Murphy. Strong maybe.
Agreed.
Carlos Mendoza, New York Mets, no. Philadelphia Phillies, Don Mattingly, no. Don Mattingly is the funniest one so far. Pittsburgh Pirates, Don Kelly.
Wait. What about Dusty Wathan?
Dusty Wathan, yes. No rules in Dusty's house. Come on in. Don Kelly, Pittsburgh Pirates. Maybe.
I think that's a maybe. I think that's a maybe.
San Diego Padres, Craig Stammen, no.
No.
San Francisco Giants, Tony Vitello, absolutely.
Of course. Like, he's probably hardest, he yes. probably is so mad that he didn't get to do this because the Giants have not
oh my God,
won so enough right. games at home for any sort of version of this to happen.
Too cold in San Francisco to take sure. your shirt off at the game. Blake Butera, Washington Nationals, loose maybe. Maybe down the road.
Down the road. I don't think he would do it in year one.
First year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Athletics, Mark Kotze. I think yes. Maybe to yes.
Wow. Okay. I was not in the yes camp there, but
okay.
Sure.
Okay, okay. Orioles, Craig Albernaz, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Chad Tracy, Red Sox, no. Chicago Agreed. White Sox, Will Venable. I don't have a great feel for Will Venable. I've never been in a yeah. scrum with him, so I don't know.
I think I'd lean
we'll say
no.
I don't know. Stephen Vogt, yeah. Cleveland Guardians. Curious for your take on this.
This is a maybe, but I don't think it's a definite yes. But if Austin Hedges said so, then probably yes.
Austin Hedges, yes. Stephen Vogt, no. AJ Hinch, Detroit Tigers, no chance. Houston Astros, Joe Espada, no. Cotraro in Kansas City, no. Kurt Suzuki in Anaheim, yes.
He's closer to yes than a lot of these other guys for sure.
Okay. Derek Shelton in Minnesota, no. Maybe.
Probably not. Probably he's maybe Aaron Boone, a maybe. Yeah.
Aaron Boone is a no, but closer to yes than you think. Or close, like he's like a maybe to no. But I would think people would be surprised. Dan Wilson, Seattle, no chance, right?
Nope.
Kevin Cash in Tampa.
I mean, he's got the tenure.
I would say
like no,
he's got he could do anything.
He's
he wants
a maybe. I still lean no there. I still lean no there.
Skip Shoemaker. I always struggle with that. In Texas, I'm going to say no. John Schneider in Toronto, absolutely yes. So I think the yeses are John Schneider, Kurt Suzuki, Craig Albernaz, Ollie Marmol, obviously, and Tony Vitello, I think are the only ones where I'm certain that they would do this. And Dusty Wong.
I think you skipped. Did you say Warren Schaefer?
I skipped Warren Schaefer and Dave Roberts somehow. Warren Schaefer and Dave Roberts, I skipped, and Warren Schaefer is a no. And Dave Roberts is a maybe if it wasn't the Dodgers, maybe. But it's a no
right.
because it's the Dodgers.
In summation, I think the takeaway here. If you're wondering what our logic is, to me, it was like, who could get away with it? Who's got like the organizational pull to be like, what are you going to fire me? And I think Ollie clearly has already survived many a hot seat. Yeah. And it's like, I just got extended.
Can't
I'm chilling.
Kill me.
But it's also,
there's a great rap yeah. lyric. That's like, you can't stomp on me. I'm already dirt. You know, like you can't kill me. I'm already dead. I'm Ollie Marmol, baby. You do get mad at me.
The other part of it for me from assessing whether is it's like, it's not just like, are you taking yourself too seriously? It's, do you view the clubhouse as this sacred space that only the major yeah. leaguers who've earned their way there? And Ollie's like, whatever, man. Like, this is funny. Come on in. Like, that's great. And that's fine for like a young team. Yeah. It's not full of grizzled veterans the way the Cardinals were for so long. I think it's perfect. So anyway,
yeah.
Shout out to Ollie. That was Tarps Off. Okay, two more series before we take a break. The New York Mets, folks, remember them?
Alive.
They are somehow feeling good. They've won 5 of their last 6. We wondered if they could carry the momentum of sweeping the total mess that is the Detroit Tigers into the weekend. against a Yankees team that was also kind of scuffling amid their long road trip. On Friday night, it was, okay, the Yankees are way better than the Mets. Cam Schlittler was amazing. Ben Rice, he finally wakes up after his mini skid. He hits his 14th homer. Clay Holmes takes a comebacker from Spencer Jones and breaks his fibula. Ouch. So he's going to be out for a while. That's bad news for the Mets. So just more bad news for the Mets. Another guy, another important player injured. Schlittler dominates them. The Yankees are better. But from there, the Yankees were the team that a lot of us were kind of laughing at because of how this, how the rest of the weekend went.
And this series flips with an all-time error from friend of the program, Carlos Rodon. A play that may never happen again in the history of our sport. Runners on second and third. Carlos wild pitch yeets one off of like the stone behind home plate and it kicks up in the air. First run scores. Carlos, in trying to get that first runner out, bare hands the ball mid jump and tries to like Jeter throw to home and just hucks it to nobody. And the second run scores. I was like somewhat embarrassed to know Carlos when I saw him do this. I mean, this
the only comp that I have for this is Tarek Skubal hiking the ball last year.
Yes.
Now the stakes were much lower. This is much lower earlier in the season.
A postseason
spot is not on the line, but it's one of those things where for some reason in that moment, Carlos thought, as Skubal did last year, oh man, this looks so cool. And then it's like, oh no. Oh, what are you thinking?
No, don't do that.
And then when it goes wrong, you're thinking, why would you possibly think this was a good idea? So that's my comp for this. And what happened on Sunday was a much more impressive win because for other than that, I guess you could say that's the reason the Yankees lost that game. But generally, you know, the Mets win 6-3.
It's not. But from a vibes perspective, I mean, it made the Yankees seem fallible, right? It was like they have guys that are trying to do that. They're doing circus tricks. They're playing banana ball out there. We could beat them. The Mets win game shots. 2, and then they come back in game 3, and they're playing a crap game for most of this. Bo Bichette drops just like a routine pop up, and it's just ugly, ugly, ugly. But then, in the bottom of the ninth, down 3, you get a single from Carson Bench, you get a single from Bo Bichette, and then you get a 2-out Tyrone Taylor game-tying homer down the left field line. Tyrone Taylor, one of my favorite people in the game. What a good dude. Not a good hitter, or has not been a good hitter, but he got all of this one, and it was catharsis in Queens. It was just an incredible moment for Taylor and for the Mets. Goes to extras. Devin Williams tosses up a 0 top 10 on a huge double play ball turned by Mark Vientos over to short, back to first. And then they win it in the bottom with a very weird Carson Bench infield chopper that the 5-man Yankees infield couldn't handle. And the Mets, who were 0-91 in their last 91 games when trailing, entering the ninth inning, they had not won a game when trailing in the ninth inning since the Pete Alonso homer off of Devin Williams in the 2024 wildcard game. That is a remarkable statistic. They do it. They come back. They win. The vibes are, at least for now, on their side. The road remains very bumpy as they do not have everybody.
Alvarez hurt, so injured.
Lindor hurt, Holmes hurt, Polanco and
Polanco
hurt.
Polanco's hurt just going to play through it. Yeah, which we've seen this with Polanco over the past few years. He's just kind of perpetually
Ronnie
injured,
Moe,
and sometimes he plays through it
hurt,
and is great, and sometimes he's
Jared
terrible.
Jared Young so. Out. Kodai Senga doesn't have that dog
Who
in
knows?
Him. AJ Minter is on this team. Whatever. The Mets, look, things are moving in the correct direction. And that is all that anyone in Queens can ask for. It is a long season. There is still time. Do I think the Mets are going to make the playoffs? Yes. Yes, I do. I picked them to win the World Series. And I would rather die on that hill than leave it. And so that's what I will do. Jordan, let's do this. Boy. Let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we will give the White Sox the love they deserve. And then we will do Turbo. Does that work for you?
Fine with me.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's finish up rivalry weekend in Chicago. But the Chicago White Sox took 2 out of 3 over their North Side rivals. Cubs started this series hot, winning 10-5 in game one. Even though there were a lot of home runs, Colson Montgomery, Miguel Vargas, Jared Kelenic going deep for the White Sox. Jeez Louise. But then Davis Martin, the best pitcher you don't know about, pushes his ERA down to 1.61 with 6 innings, 1 run. Taillon allows 5 long balls, 2 for Murakami, Vargas, Montgomery, and Andrew Benintendi, who I cannot believe is still in the White Sox. The White Sox win that 8-3, and then game three was a wild one. We had PCA chirping with fans. We had Colin Ray and Eric Fetty both getting cranked. We had a Tristan Peters 3-run bomb off Phil Maton. We had Michael Conforto punching back with one of his own. And then Edgar Caro, who has been one of the worst players in the entire sport. A bad defender who has not been hitting. He hits a 2-run walk-off home run. And Southside, stand up!
Yes, so the White Sox have this unbelievable trio of Murakami, Montgomery, and Vargas, who have now all homered in the same game like 5 times or some ridiculous number. But that's Caro and Peters both hitting their first homers of the season to have the White Sox come back in this game just kind of speaks to the state of the White Sox offense, which is suddenly one of the most fun groups to watch in the sport. They do have some pitchers like Davis Martin who are certainly throwing a lot better than a lot of people realize. You know, Sir Anthony Dominguez, their big bullpen addition in the offseason, has not been good. He serves up that homer to Michael Conforto, and he remains something of a liability. But the White Sox are second in baseball in home runs right now, which is just incredible. And as I mentioned, that is not just a matter of Murakami. They are tied with Atlanta, just 2 behind the Yankees with 66 homers in 46 games. So this lineup has been a treat to watch. This series did kind of follow the same pattern of that Yankees one where it seemed like the Cubs kind of put them in their place on Friday. But the White Sox, this White Sox team, and unlike the Mets, we should say, who have this huge hole to dig out of, the White Sox are above 500. And 1 game back of the Cleveland Guardians in first place. They've played 2 fewer games, have the same number of losses. Run differential still in the negative, but you can tell that this team is just playing with a lot more confidence. It's still a situation where the bottom of this roster, the bottom half of this roster and a good amount of this pitching staff is probably going to make it difficult for them to sustain this. But in the American League, man, like they're going to stay relevant for longer than people probably expect. And I, as far as fans who I'm happy for to see have any amount of success, they're way up there on the list. God, we mentioned it earlier this week or last week. So this is just awesome to see. I talked about on Friday how excited I was that the series was at home. And I think for them to have a walk-off win like that with Caro to finish the weekend was really, really cool. So I'm sure there are some White Sox fans that are listening and are still kind of upset that we're not giving them even more attention and more love. But man, it's been cool. And so now they go on the road. They've got a West Coast trip to the Mariners and the Giants before coming home for the Twins and the Tigers. So, hey, they beat up on the Mariners last series. So let's see if they can keep it going.
It's one of the stories of the season so far. How 100%. Long will it last?
100%.
Don't care. This is the ultimate summer fling. Okay. Are you going to make it the distance? Who cares? Whatever. This is amazing right now. And they're not just playing. They're not just winning games. Like, they're fun to watch. They're having a good time. Yes. Murakami. Like, there's just so much going right in Chicago for once.
Yep.
And I hope White Sox fans savor every last drop of this. Man, is it super fun. All
right. And hey, and I love to say, and even if it turns south in the next couple months, you got the number one pick. You got the number one pick. That's cool. You're winning baseball games and you got the number one pick in the July draft. All right, plenty more baseball to get to. Let's go fast. It's turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
The berm was packed with Giants fans in the sack over the weekend at the Sut in Yolo County. That's a sentence you maybe don't understand, but maybe you do. Giants take 2 out of 3 over the A's on the road in Sacramento. The Giants are playing a whole lot better. Luis Arraez with a huge weekend, homering twice. First 2 home runs of the season. Had 4 hits in the first game of the set. A's did win that one. Game 2, Trevor McDonald was great for the Giants. And Casey Schmidt had 2 bombs as they battle back and take game 2. Then it's a bit of a rout in the rubber match. San Francisco wins 10-1. It was close until late. Giants break it open against the A's leaky pen. Harrison Bader, opposite field grand slam over that tiny wall in right field. And the Giants are not good yet, but they've been better. They have the same record as the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals, which says a lot about them as it does about the Giants. Jordan, take me to Ohio.
I was not in Ohio this weekend as I was visiting my sister in Boston, watching a whole bunch of New England baseball. But back home in the Northeast Ohio region, we had the Cleveland Guardians taking 2 out of 3 over the Cincinnati Reds. Reds won that series opener as Tanner Bibee pitched pretty well, but still looking for his first win of the year. He's now over 50 innings this season without a pitcher win. Sucks for him. I like Tanner Bibee. That's too bad. Reds win that one 7-6. But on Saturday, it's the Angel Martinez show. This guy is really starting to turn it on. Definitely a player I've enjoyed watching. Even last year when he was objectively bad, I have enjoyed watching Angel Martinez, and he has really started to perform for Cleveland. He has a big game with a double and a go-ahead homer as the Guards win 7-4. And then on Sunday, the Guardians hit 6 home runs, which I believe is their most home runs in a home game since like 2012, I think, maybe 2013. So it's been a while since they put together an offensive showing like that. Guards cruise to that one 10-3. JJ Blade, we are aware you have really turned your career around and are raking for the Reds, but because they did not win the series, we are not going to spend any more time than that. But maybe JJ Blade will force us to talk about him again soon.
The Guardians have 50 home runs this year. That puts them in 15th in baseball, which is as high as I can remember them being in recent memory. Stephen Vogt talked about it over the weekend and made a great point, which was like, a lot of our players were 23, 24, 25, and 26. Sometimes you don't grow into power into your late 20s, which is both way too simple of an explanation and, you know, maybe a little bit right. The Blue Jays took 2 out of 3 over the Tigers over the weekend in Detroit as 2 struggling AL teams faced off to see who is struggling more. Tigers won game 1 on a walk-off from Spencer Torkelson. Trey Savage was pretty good, and the Tigers didn't care. They win that one. Game 2, Mize goes 6 scoreless. Jays bullpen game, just as good. Yohendrick Piñango, my new favorite name in the sport. First career home run for the Blue Jays. They win 2-1 in 10 innings. Game 3, Kevin Gausman carved up the farm. Vlad homers. Hitting in the 2-hole, first time in a year, basically, that he wasn't hitting in the 3-spot. 2 more extra base hits for Dalton Varsho. He's been hitting up. Jack Flaherty stinks again. And the Blue Jays are closer to getting back on track than the Tigers. Jordan, let's talk about beans.
The beans, the bean eaters show Boston. They say, hey, look, your whole problem as an organization is that 130 years ago, you were not eating enough beans. As the Braves take 2 out of 3 over the Red Sox, we get a Yaz walk-off double in the 10th on Friday. The Red Sox bounce back and survive a messy 9th inning from Aroldis Chapman. He survives it himself by one of the great PFP plays I've seen in a really long time. A comebacker that hits off his foot. He somehow recovers and gets the last out. So the Red Sox hold on 3-2 on Saturday. But then Brian Bello, just a real stinker, allows 7 runs in 5 innings. He's probably at risk of losing his rotation spot at this point because the young lefties, Connelly Earle and Peyton Tolley, those guys have been terrific. So we will see what happens with that Red Sox rotation. Their issue, though, still is their offense has not been good whatsoever as the Braves win on Sunday. Drake Baldwin continues to amaze. The Red Sox are 10-10 since firing Alex Cora, which maybe tells us that they're just kind of mid, and that's where they'll be, whether Chad Tracy is there or Alex Cora.
Sure. I want to give them a little bit of leash. I can't believe I'm saying that because few teams in baseball piss me off more than the Red Sox right now. However, they've been playing without their best pitcher and their best hitter. Roman Anthony has been out and Garrett Crochet has been out, and you can envision those two guys getting back in the relatively short term and things turning around a little bit in Boston. Let's go to Florida, where the Citrus Bowl occurred. Tree fall in a forest. No, that's too mean. Rays take 2 out of 3 over the Marlins. The Rays have the 4th best playoff odds in baseball behind the Dodgers, Yankees, and Braves. Cedric Mullins, 4 for 4 in game 1 on Friday. He had been terrible, hit a home run in that one. Nick Martinez, 6 scoreless in game 2, but the Marlins put up 8 in the top of the 10th. Sure. Absolutely. Game 3 in the rubber match. Rasmussen, pretty good. Yandy and Caminero go yard. The Rays win 6-3. Yuri Perez has been disappointing this season. The Rays keep on rolling. Fun matchup between them and the Orioles this week, who lost in Nats Park as the Nationals took 2 out of 3 from Baltimore. Hot dog day on Friday seemed like an utter delight. Zach Littell, 5 scoreless. Miracles, they do occur. Daylon Lyle, 7th home run of the year. Game 2, homers from K-Bear, Jacob Young, and Brady House. This game was 4-3 in the 7th, then the O's bullpen just soiled itself, and the Nats won 13-3. A game that sent the Nats back to .500. The Nats were 0-15 in their last 15 games where a win would have brought them to .500, which is a remarkable stat.
That's an amazing stat. I missed that one. Wow.
Remarkable stat. Kudos to Mark Zuckerman. And his phenomenal Substack had that one in there. And then game 3, the Nats dip back below .500 as the Richard Lovelady Miles Michaelis combo does what it does. And Gunner goes deep, 3rd deck down the line and right. Quite an impressive homer. 1st homer of the year from Couser. Interesting season or series of events for Kobe Mayo, who hit a foul ball home run on Saturday, flipped his bat, chucked it in the air, like might have hit the space station. Ball called foul, strikes out. Video of him in the dugout calling himself a jackass. Homers on Sunday, puts the bat down very gently. The Orioles play the Rays 6 times over the next 10 days, and I think we'll learn a lot about them during that stretch. Mm.
Good call there. 3 more series. Let's go out to Arizona, I believe, where the Rockies and Diamondbacks played 3 very compelling baseball games that I watched every single minute of. And you know how you know that? Because I was wrong. This series was in Colorado. Merrill Kelly goes complete game on Friday. Oldest complete game by a Snakes pitcher since Randy Johnson. Shout out Sarah Langs for that nugget. Tomoyuki Sugano has a solid outing on Saturday. Rockies win that one. But then Mike Soroka pitches well on Sunday. Corbin Carroll, 2 home runs. Arizona wins 8-6. Diamondbacks are just, they're barely hanging on. They're still under .500 by a game. But you know what? If they can just hold on there until their better arms come back from being injured, maybe they have a chance. But, and by better arms, we mean AJ Puck, we mean Corbin Burns, Justin Martinez. I don't know. Their pitchers have been throwing a lot better recently, which is encouraging, but they are a very, very strange team. Let's go to Texas, where Houston takes 2 out of 3 over the Rangers. Boy, did the Astros need this one after dropping 3 of 4 against the Mariners at home. Spencer Arrighetti takes a no-hitter into the 8th on Friday. That ends up being broken up by Justin Foscue, but that's the only hit of the day for the Rangers. Astros win 2-0. Jacob DeGrom allows 4 home runs on Saturday. Yikes. Altuve, Yordan, Christian Walker, Zach Cole go deep. Astros win 4-1. But then, uh-oh, Astros, don't get too comfy as Nathan Eovaldi shuts him down on Sunday. Rangers win 8-0, and even worse, Jose Altuve heads to the injured list with an oblique injury. They are so injured, and now they are still, I mean, they win this series, which is nice. Their pitching has been slightly better. You've gotten some showings from Peter Lambert, and now Kaiwei Tang, and Eric Geddy has certainly stepped it up. But they just, I mean, this is still a real mess of a team. And they are in, not in last place because the Angels exist, but they are 10 games under 500 still. So even in the American League, which is not good, that is quite the hole.
Brewers take 2 out of 3 over the Twins. They win game one. Aaron Ashby, this is a remarkable thing. Aaron Ashby is a reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a fact. Aaron Ashby is 8-0. 8-0. No one else in the sport has 7 wins, let alone 8. He has thrown 29 innings and he has 8 wins. It is so cool. The ultimate snake. So he gets another one in game one against the Twins. Game two, Jackson Churio, first homer of the year. Chad Patrick has a 4-inning save as the Brewers continue to do quirky things. They win 2-1. Can't finish things off on Sunday as Bailey Ober is better than Robert Gasser. Ryan Jeffers is very good, Twins catcher. Royce Lewis has been awful, and it might be reaching a point where he needs to go to the minor leagues to figure things out. Brewers against the Cubs this week at Wrigley starting tonight. That is spicy. First time I believe these two have played this season. I could be wrong about that. Please feel free to fact check me. I've been wrong before and I will be wrong again. That is our show. Just a few quick hitters before we get out of here. There's a hockey game tonight that I care about. I can't remember the last time I was nervous for sports. Feels nice. This is why we did this in the first place, I guess.
Yep. So we'll see how this goes for our beloved Sabres. It has been quite the ride. If this is the end of the road, still grateful for how it has been. And if they win, even though the Hurricanes are clearly so much better, you can be sure that we will become on these mics on Wednesday talking about how we're coming for the cup. So hopefully that is how this goes. But yeah, no, you are correct. The Brewers and Cubs playing for the first time. Dodgers, Padres playing for the first time. And then, as I mentioned, we've got Blue Jays, Yankees, A's, Angels, Guardians, Tigers, Mets, Nats, Braves, Marlins. All of those are 4-game series. This is the biggest week of mop opportunities in the entire season. If we get to Thursday without a single mop, I will be sorely disappointed. So pressure is on those 10 teams to at least one of them to make it happen. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and TJ Brassel for producing. As always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And shouts out to the Division III baseball teams that advanced to the Super Regionals, including the Bethany Lutheran Vikings. Shouts out to listener Bethany Josh.
Bethany Lutheran. Vikings.
Hey, I'll say this. Any team that beats the Whitewater Warhawks, That's a friend of ours. Okay, if you can take down the Warhawks, the defending champions, you've got our appreciation. They truly are. They are the Yankees of Division III athletics, to be honest. All right, we're done. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Go Sabres!